The Conference Committee on Senate File 3683 will come to order. First thing I want to do, members, we need to introduce ourselves to staff so we all know who we're talking to, and I will start with myself. Senator Bickerman, I come from southwestern Minnesota. My hometown is Tracy.
I'm Representative Al Junkey, the chair of the Ag Finance and Veterans Affairs Finance in the House.
I'm Catherine Beyer. I'm the committee administrator for the House Ag Committees.
I'm Representative Mary Ellen Otremba, and I'm from Long Prairie, and I'm the policy chair.
Representative Rod Hamilton from Mountain Lake.
Representative Lyle Coonan from Clara City.
Representative Carla Bigham from Cottage Grove.
Colby Sullivan with the House Research Department.
Jim Cleary, House Research for Veterans Affairs.
I'm Tom Bodern with Senate Council on Research.
Greg Knapp, Senate Council on Research.
Senator Dan Scogin, hometown Hewitt, 35 inches of snow in the last 45 days.
Steve Dill, State Senator from Dassel.
Sandy Brown, Senate Agriculture Committee.
Tim Michaels, Committee Administrator for Senate Agriculture and Veterans Committee.
So we have a couple more members. When they come, I'll have them just introduce themselves here, and we will start right in. With a lot to get done. I think Representative Junkie, you don't get done around 5:30, so yep. If we get going.
Well, Mr. Chair, and the members of Senator Bickerman and I, but mainly our staff, Tim and Kate, have been meeting. We hope to have not only go through side-by-sides today, but actually get some work done. I think we can adopt a lot of the veterans provisions. We think we're in agreement. There's some questions on some. We'll get explanations on some. And then, Senator Bickerman, I think we'd like to come back here on Friday morning and see if we can't finish the bill up at that time. But there's a lot of things we'll set aside till then that have to be worked out over the week. And we'll discover that as we go forward, I think.
Representative Junkie, I'm going to tell you right now, my granddaughter's getting married Saturday, and I'm going to that wedding regardless of what you guys
do. So we're going to be done Friday.
She comes first. Okay, we'll just go through the side-by-side. If staff like to do that, and we'll be working off.
Mr. Chairman?
Some right here. Whoever wants to
start. On page R1 of the revisor side-by-side. And if you look at this is Article 1 agricultural policy. On which the first thing you see, the House has the language that was kind of worked out in the working group for the livestock investment grant program. You'll see some differences on the Senate side. The Senate doesn't include horses under livestock. The House has provisions for pasture that were also a part of that agreement for the working group. And then on page R2, you can see both sides have fences, but the House includes language on 3.1 for livestock pens and corrals and sorting, restraining, loading chutes. And then on the bottom of page R2, you can see the Senate has a little different language on the appropriate feedlot registration. The House has appropriate feedlot registration. There was an issue in the Senate side as to what that really meant. And so what the Senate says is hold a feedlot registration if required. And then also on 3.20, the Senate adds in the $4,000 minimum, although that's in both bills. This just restates that $4,000 minimum qualifying expenditures to submit an application. And then, Mr. Chairman, on page R3, the process is basically the same on both sides. And Mr. Sullivan might want to describe the provisions on R3 and the House side dealing with the waste pesticide collection.
Mr. Chair and members, on pages R3 and R4, and I believe on R6, we finish up with the House's provisions that modify the Department of Agriculture's waste pesticide collection program. I could step through what we do, or is that good enough for?
Mr. Chair, that's good enough. You will see, I see a note laying here from AMC on a number of provisions in here. They do address that provision. Just for conferees information, you may want to look at that. I would suggest that both the livestock investment grants and the waste pesticide collection will be addressed Friday. So we've got some amendments and some issues we're trying to work through during the week, and that will be one of those we'll do Friday morning.
Before we go any further, members, we have two more members on the Senate side, Senator Erickson Ropes and Senator Murphy. Well, now
this isn't the Transportation there. Committee. Are you in the right spot?
He's where I put him.
I see.
There you go.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, last time I checked,
Ag uses a lot of transportation.
As long as we don't put seat belts on the tractors.
That's in here, isn't it?
Okay, continue.
And, well, Mr. Chairman, both sides have prohibited pesticide use provisions. The House has a couple of additional provisions. One deals with drift beyond the boundaries of the target site, basically making, even if it's unintentional, making it illegal for the pesticide drift. And then on page R4, 5.16 to 5.19 on the House. And then if you look at the bottom of page R5, you see both sides deal with the whole issue of basically a target spraying on the wrong site. And the House has provisions that says that it's except as public health purposes, it's a violation. The wording's a little bit different. The Senate was worked out, I think, with some of the aerial sprayers and some of the other groups to reflect basically that if it's requested, ordered, contracted for, permitted, or if it's done pursuant to paragraph C clauses 2 and 3, and you can actually see that on the previous page, where it's mosquito control, gypsy moth, or public health risk, whenever those things. The House only has public health purposes is the exception, so there could be an issue with regard to the mosquito spraying or gypsy moth control. And then the House includes an additional provision disallowing a person from spraying within the right-of-way, within any public right-of-way. That would be also, or even in a manner that results in drifting into the public right-of-way, whether the drift is intentional or not. So that would make it a violation, even if it's unintentional. And, Mr. Chairman, then the House has more language dealing with the waste pesticide. I assume you want to just lay that over for Friday for now still. Mr. Chairman, there's a junkie. And then the Senate on page R7 has the provision on anhydrous ammonia tanks. This was a provision of Senator Kubley's, and it does require the department to initiate rules to allow the use of tanks with a capacity greater than 3,000 but no greater than 5,000 when applying anhydrous. And there are some restrictions that were asked for by the department that are included in that, and also some transportation issues that the MnDOT came forward with, so those are all included. As far as the revention, Section 4 on the Senate side, Section 8 on the House side, the revocation and suspension, that language is identical. It was a department language. This deals with fertilizer applicators and fertilizer licenses, and that was that's the same on both sides. On page R8, we have similar language on the payment of correction action costs. The only thing I would note, though, is in Senate File 3326, where this is language for Section 5 on the Senate side came from, there was, I think it was a floor amendment that deleted 6.25 to 6.26, deleted that paragraph because it's deemed as no longer necessary. When this bill was going through committee, there was some discussion as to whether or not that was needed anymore, and the department then came back and said go ahead and delete that. But it's not deleted in either side here, but it is in the separate bill that passed the Senate, sitting over in the House on the floor. That language has been stricken. And then so on the bottom of page R8, those are the same on vending machines. We've got license fees and penalties. That's the same on both sides as far as I can tell. Same with the next page, R10. Kind of a mess, but it's the same. Page R11, those are the same on both sides. This is department language dealing with food handlers and disaster areas. And then on page R12, you have egg grading. The one difference you'll see is on the Senate side, 11.30. You'll see the Senate eliminates the grandfathering in for those people that had the equipment used prior to July 1, 1991. And the House continues that grandfathering language. So that's the one difference on page R12. And on page R13, those are identical on both sides. R14, those are identical on both sides, including the Semetic cell count for goat milk. And on section 15, we've got some differences, but I wasn't sure if this conference committee is going to deal with this at all, since this is all contained within House File 4075. It passed the Senate and calendar yesterday, and my understanding that will be heading on its way to the governor within a day or two. So I don't know if you want to even deal at all with page R15.
Mr. Chair, I would think we would, upon approval by Senator Scoy and Representative Olin, we'll just jettison that. But we want to make sure Animal Board of Health doesn't need anything additional, or if anything's missing in that final bill, we'd ask them. I see them sitting in the back to let us know if they need this duplicative language or if there's something missing that we can put in. But we can deal with that on Friday to make sure everyone's looked at it.
And then, Mr. Chairman, on R16, you have the next-gen board provisions. And one of the things you'll notice is the Senate amends the entire section. And so that's why you see more language on the Senate side. It's just existing law. So we amend the whole section, and the House does it by subdivision because of the way the repealer works. And so basically it's the same on both sides, even though you'll see more language on the Senate side. And then on the top of page R17, you can see the difference. The Senate extends the expiration date through 2014, and the House repeals the expiration date for the next gen board. So that's why you see those two things lined up, the repealer and the expiration date. The House just repeals that subdivision. And then they're both the House and Senate on the expiration date for MAILC, the Ag Education Leadership Council, are the same, that extended it to 2013. The one thing the House does is puts the effective date, and I think that's probably a good idea since this may not become effective until either July 1st or August 1st, depending on appropriations, and to make sure that it becomes effective before it does expire. I think it makes sense on the House side to have that day following final enactment effective date. We don't have that on the Senate side. And then the House has that provision on, Mr. Colt Sullivan describe the emergency deterrent materials assistance provision.
Mr. Chair and members, this was part of the, I guess you'd say, the House's comprehensive approach to the bovine tuberculosis problem in northwestern Minnesota. The intention of this piece of language here is to transfer authority to provide fencing assistance to folks located near infected herds from the Department of Natural Resources to the Board of Animal Health. The Board of Animal Health piece isn't in this section. It's earlier in the piece that we just talked about before. So because the Department of Natural Resources testified that the situation had moved from a wildlife management situation to more of an animal husbandry situation.
But, Mr. Chairman, this is not in the bovine TB bill, the 4075.
Right.
So this is, and it's actually amending the game and fish laws. It is an existing program within DNR that provides some money for materials assistance. And this was added in a few years ago when this problem was just coming around, and that this would remove it from that. But there was not anything on the Senate side on this, and again, it wasn't part of the bovine TB bill. So if you want to consider it, you would have to do it here. And, Mr. Chairman, then on page R18, the animal chiropractic, we've got a few differences. Mostly it's the same, but if you look on House 20.8, you see the phrase, but are not limited to. So these are the types of things that an animal chiropractor can do. The Senate lists the items out, but doesn't allow additional items to do it. And you'll see that that's a difference between the two sides on the scope of practice. And you'll see that also. And then on page R19, that's basically the same, including the interim statute. The types of the requirements for the training and educational criteria are the same. Titles are the same. You see on page R20, similar language on both sides. The one thing you see on the bottom of page R20, you have a House-only provision requiring, basically stating that a licensed chiropractor who treats both animals and humans patients in the same facility must post a conspicuous sign in the reception area. So that's a difference between the two sides. That just shows up on the House side. And then you have the animal chiropractic continuing education hours. Those are similar, or actually the same. You've got the patients, the separate treatment room required. That's the same. And then we get into the veterinary medicine provisions on the two sides. And R21, those are the same on the bottom there. And then on R22, you see in the top, it's basically the same. The big difference on the House side, they strike a copy of the discharge papers for a person in the armed forces and just state proof thereof. and then also include a provision they got in a couple places here on clause 5, and then you see on the bottom of page R22 on the House side that if it's a legal resident alien, basically that, well, first of all, you got to have proof of that status in clause 5 above, and then on the bottom it says that if you're granted that the license expires on the same date as their legal status expires. In R23 you have the same provisions, R24 you have the same provisions, and on R25 the Senate, and this was actually part of the chiropractic bill on the Senate side, and if you look on 23.18 and 23.19, the Senate, it's a kind of a cross-reference in the veterinary statutes, includes a cross-reference that says a licensed chiropractor registered under 148.01 subdivision 1A from practicing animal chiropractic. And if you read that in context, it basically says that no provision of this chapter shall be construed to prohibit, and it's basically prohibiting a licensed chiropractor from doing those things as long as they're registered with the chiropractic board under the previous provisions. So it's more of a cross-reference to that. Then you see the bottom of page R25, those are the same. Top of page R26, those are the same. And same with R27. Again, we're still in the vet-med stuff. R28, you see that's basically the same. I think it's completely the same. And then on R29, we get into the biodiesel fuel content, and you'll see there are a number of differences between the House and the Senate. I mean, they both pass the same schedule for biodiesel fuel, but there are some differences where the Senate precludes biodiesel produced from palm oil unless it's contained within waste or grease oil collected in the United States or Canada. The House requires that the biodiesel oil be certified by the BQ9000 National Biodiesel Accreditation Program. So that's a difference in the two sides. On R30, we've got some capitalization differences. I don't know, biodiesel task force, whether it's capitalized or not a big deal. And then you've got some language on the Senate side at 28.24. You have the 75% that is produced in the United States and Canada is equal to at least 50% of the anticipated demand. So you've got an additional restriction. The House side is basically the 50%. There has to be 50% capacity for biodiesel before these additional increases in the percentage requirements happen. And the Senate has the additional restriction of that 75% of that must be from feedstock from Canada in the United States. You also have a provision on the Senate side in 28.29 that says at least 5% must come from sources other than agricultural resources traditionally grown or raised in the state, including but not limited to algae and other items that are listed there. But it also allows Clause 4 to be waived if the commissioners find that the use of these feedstocks would be uneconomic and market conditions exist. So it basically puts another condition on when you can ramp up the percentage increases, but it also allows on that 5% part for the commissioners to waive that. Again, you've got some technical on the capitalization on the bottom page, R30. And then on R31, they're the same, except the House adds two new exceptions for off-road logging equipment and machinery and vehicles equipment used exclusively for aircraft landing field. So the House adds two new exceptions to the biodiesel, but then if you look on 38.22, the House sunsets or makes those, all of them expire, including the existing ones for motors located at a generating plant regulated by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, railroad locomotives, and off-road taconite. So all of those would be gone after May 1st of 2012, not just the new ones. And then on R31, you have the disclosure requirements that are similar. Now, in the annual report, you'll see that there's an additional sentence on the Senate side. On 30.5, the report shall include information about the impacts of the biodiesel mandate on the development of biodiesel production capacity in the state and the use of feedstock grown or raised in the state for biodiesel production. So you see some additional language on the Senate side. And then on R32, the House has some ethanol blending policy. Mr. Sullivan? Yeah.
Mr. Chair and members of the House, in addition to a biodiesel article, also has an ethanol article, which begins on R32. Basically, what happens on R32 is language to essentially make way in the Department of Commerce's weights and measures laws for ethanol blends that contain more than 10% ethanol. The state has currently applied for a waiver to use E20 in standard vehicles. So this language would open up for that possibility while still, if you turn to page R33, restrict gasoline sold for use in standard combustion engines to E10 until the day that the EPA grants a waiver to use higher ethanol blends. And so then there are two classifications for gasoline blended with ethanol, one for standard combustion engines and one for flex fuel vehicles, because currently under the Clean Air Act, flex fuel vehicles can run on any blend of ethanol and gasoline. So and it also allows gasoline and ethanol to be blended in ethanol blending pumps, which when this language was originally written, that was not allowed in the state. Since then, it has been allowed, but this kind of just clarifies the current situation.
Mr. Chair, just so people know, this is the blender pump amendment. I think a lot of you, I don't know about everyone, but I know in our area, Belgrade, Appleton, there's a number of co-ops now that are putting in these blender pumps, and you punch E20, E30, E50, or E85, and it blends and prices right there at the pump. And so most of this amendment basically describes those blender pumps and how they're labeled and everything else. But then it goes further than to ask that we put in a request for a waiver from the federal government so that these blender pumps now can be used on other vehicles besides flex fuel. So we're asking for that waiver, which I think is important. The latest studies back from Mankato and North Dakota are showing that the mid-grades of ethanol, E20 to E30, actually increase your gas mileage over E10 and E0. And if that's the case, there's going to be a real demand for people to use those pumps, and we'd like the feds to get that waiver going so it can actually save fuel use in the state once these pumps go in. So this whole amendment basically is in there. It was a Westrom amendment on the floor to describe those blender pumps and put into law what's already going on out in the field.
And Mr. Chairman, if you turn to page R34, you have some language that the Senate only, and it deals with racetracks, horse racetracks, and it basically allows for simulcasting of horse races if there are different of all breeds of horses, and it basically provides an exception from some current restrictions on that use for certain tracks. Or certain track anyways.
And Mr. Chair, members, that bill was signed on Friday, so in all likelihood we'll just remove that language just for committee members' information.
So Mr. Chairman, we can move on to R37. And we have the same provision for biodiesel fuel, providing that cross-reference. And the House, I think I'll just describe quickly here, the House just does the same thing for ethanol, is that rather than having a separate definition within the tax code, within the gas tax code, would be just a cross-reference that in the code for the people who regulate the pumps. And that the Senate did it for biodiesel. The House continues it for ethanol, too. And then, Mr. Chairman, on page R38, you have a House-only provision dealing with charitable gambling, I think.
Mr. Chairman and members, Section 14 on the House side allows a gambling organization, a veterans gambling organization, to essentially deduct the treat as an allowable expense, the cost of publishing a newsletter.
And maybe Hamilton can talk about that section.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I was talking with Representative Szymanski, and he brought amendment forward on the House floor. And unfortunately, it did offer up some controversy, and I think the agreement was to remove that in its entirety. So I believe that's the route we'll go. So.
Okay.
All of Section 14.
All of the section, yes, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, then on the Senate side in R38, we have a number of provisions from Senator Dill's Teddy Roosevelt bill, and it deals with that. You got a provision on the comprehensive plan for counties, basically requiring them to consider adopting goals and objectives, and then you've got the open space in Greater Minnesota in Section 47. I won't go into too much detail on this. I think it will be discussed later, maybe in detail. In Section 48, you have the plan update. When updating the plan, they're supposed to consider the natural heritage data. And then in Section 49, you get into the town and city planning provisions, and you'll see comparable provisions to what are in the county ones above. And so it basically just matches what's going on in the county ones for the metro, for the city and towns. And then you've got the Stanley Development Goals and Objectives on page R40. You've got some language dealing with some goals and objectives for those towns and cities. And then the title on section 52 on the Theodore Roosevelt Memorial Bill.
And we'll go into all that. Mr. Chair. Just to this section, this is one of these we'll work on Friday, but Senator Dill, you know what happened in the House. We had a dust up with our northern Minnesota contingency over there who has lots and lots and lots and lots of open space right now and really don't care to have any more up there. And so I told them, including my roommate, that we would work and try and find some compromise language perhaps. I suggest it might be exempting counties over a certain percent of public lands already or doing something like that. But, Senator Dill, I'm committed and the House is committed to trying to find the middle ground on this. I know it's a bill you've had, and it's been through, it went through committees in the House also, but it did not make it to the final gate.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, I would have to say that in northern Minnesota they do have a problem with fragmentation of forest land, which has a very strong impact, a negative impact on forestry, which is very important up there. So I think they need this bill.
Well, okay. Senator Dill will work on it as we go.
Yes, you got it till Friday. And Mr. Chairman and members, the next part you have, both sides have an amendment for last year's finance law on ag marketing and development. And you'll see the language change is actually on page R42, but there are some differences. What the House does is just allow it to carry forward to the second year. But the Senate, the concern is that this is for the Ag BMP loan program. In the past, we've always, any appropriations that get passed through the local governments, we've made them so that they're available until spent, because it goes out to local governments and it isn't really spent right away. It goes out to a local revolving loan account, and then so we've generally had those available until spent. But there was some money in here for administration. So what the Senate did was just said any money that they pass through to local governments is available until spent. But then any unencumbered balance that is not used for pass-through is available in the second year. So it allows them to carry forward the first year to the second year for administration money, but for the money that actually goes out to local governments, that's available until spent. So as I understand it, I think that's the way the department would prefer it, but I'm not going to speak for them. But that's the intent there, and that's why you see the difference between the Senate and the House language. On R43... you see again another amendment to last year's bill, and this one is the same. It basically is the carry forward language for the you see on the top of page R45, any unencumbered balances on cancel at the end of the year. It's for the next gen grants, making sure that those carry forward from the first year to the second year, since all the money was appropriated in fiscal year 2008. And Mr. Chairman, that brings us all the way through 48. And then at the top of page R49, you have a provision on, this is also from Senator Dill's bill, on the agricultural open space. There's a preservation task force created that includes members of the legislature and members from local governments as part of the Senate bill. And then the proposal for the petroleum inspection fee revenue, that's included in both sides. That was part of the biodiesel bill. And you'll see that both of them are the same. I mean, the difference is one capitalizes pollution control agency and one just refers to commissioner of pollution control on the Senate side. The House side is probably more accurate. Section 49 on the technical cold weather issues, that's the same on both sides as far as I can tell. Sometimes they leave off. It's a little harder to tell because they don't have paragraphs quite at the same end. On page R50, you'll see some fairly significant difference on the biodiesel alternatives. On the Senate side, you've got them consulting with a broad range of stakeholders. On the House side, you have the commissioners just reviewing the technology. You also have them presenting their recommendations to the Next Gen Energy Board on the Senate side. And then so there's a, it's a little bit more language and more elaborated on the Senate side with the process and reporting the Next Gen Energy Board. They're also on 46.17 on the Senate side. You will see a new sentence that the commissioners may not recommend the use of biodiesel-based alternative for which an ASTM has not been developed and which does not provide at least the equivalent environmental emissions benefits and local economic development potential as biodiesel produced using feedstocks grown or raised in the United States and Canada. So you, there's an additional condition on that. Now, on Section 59 on the Senate side, you've got the low-carbon fuel standard study. This was to reflect there was some money appropriated in the Senate environment article, and this was to kind of redirect that. There was kind of a skeleton placed in there, and this was to say that if that money is appropriated, that this is how we're going to spend the money instead of what it says in there. What this does is do that. Now, the question here is, since the money's not in here and it just refers to that bill, this language has been picked up in the energy article now of the working group. So we probably don't need to carry this here, since what they are going to do is just appropriate the money and then include all of the language. And this was referring to that you weren't appropriating the money in here anyway, so this wouldn't work as a standalone. It would only work if the money's appropriated in the other bill for it. And they have picked up all the language now.
And that's just Section 59?
Section 59. So you really don't need to do that. Section 60 on the Senate side. And this is, again, some complexities with the budget bill. The House had a similar program, a similar cold weather blending grant that was coming out of the money, the RDF money that goes to the Department of Commerce. That's the Renewable Development Fund money that goes to the Department of Commerce. The thought was that this is more appropriate from the Next Gen grants. And so in the Senate side, we have the $500,000 from the Next Gen grants for this cold weather biodiesel blending infrastructure grant. And the recommendations for the energy article do not include using the RDF from Commerce for this purpose. So if it's done, I think it needs to be done here.
Well, Mr. Chair, and
Jenker.
Isn't this money issues have to be, we're not doing any money here. Isn't that all taken care of in 1812 with negotiations there and, frankly, with Representative Hilty and Anderson, who have those budgets?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, the issue here is this is actually the question is whether which budget area it's in. This is not new money. It's basically allocating existing money that was appropriated last year. So it could be in either bill. And the thought is right now they don't have this in the energy article because the Next Gen Energy Board is not part of their jurisdiction.
So is the monies identical in 1812 to here on the Senate side as they currently sit, or is there a difference there too?
Well, they have a working group recommendation that they're going to be hearing. I don't know if they're hearing it yet, but soon, if not yet, already in the Finance Conference Committee. And it does not include money for cold weather biodiesel blending. I think there was $250,000 on the House side.
I thought it was $300,000, but you might be right.
And this would have $500,000, but it comes from the Next Gen grants rather than from the Department of Commerce money.
And again, members, the problem with the cold weather blending grants that we ran into was a philosophical one by a number of legislators who did not think we should be giving Minnesota state dollars to blenders in South Dakota in particular, because they pick up diesel fuel in South Dakota. And what they're suggesting is that terminal could apply to Minnesota for grant dollars to upgrade their cold weather blending equipment. And so there's a philosophical wrestling match that kind of went on with that, and that was in Commerce. So we thought maybe Next Gen monies, which are already appropriated, like Mr. Knopf said, maybe that would be acceptable to that group of people. But we'll work on it. This is something we have to do on Friday, but we got a couple days to try and sort through it. But I think, we'll talk to our finance people too.
And Mr. Chairman, then on Section 61, this was also, but this now this does affect the RDF. This was This was a little bit complicated because the budget bill had already gone through the division. So when Senator Vickerman had the biodiesel bill in front of Senator Anderson's division, there was some concern to do this algae to biofuels project. So the language is included here, but it was in the House side on the energy article in the budget bill. So, and this is included in the recommendations that will be coming back from the energy working group. So you won't need to do Section 61 unless something happens with that bill. But I mean that is they're recommending including that right now from the RDF money in the Department of Commerce.
So Section 61 is being taken care of in 1812, but Section 60 is still open, and we may have to do that here. That's what you,
okay. Mr. Chairman, Brooks and York, thank you, that's right.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, if the people dealing with the veterans want to go through that, otherwise, I know there's some ag stuff at the end if you want to do that now, or if you want to just go through this sequentially page by page and wait till we get there.
I'd like to go through the whole thing, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
I think we ought to just go through the whole, then we'll come back.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and members, turning to the veterans' provisions in Article 2 of the Senate bill.
Make sure you get that microphone close. I don't know if we can hear you as well as we want to, Mr. Cleary.
How is this, sir? Mr. Chairman and members, turning to the veterans' provisions in Article 2 of the Senate bill and Article 3 of the House bill, starting on R51, Section 1 corresponds to Section 8 on the House side. It's a House-only provision that authorizes the creation of a data list, a list of deceased soldiers, those who died during active military service, including those who have a strong connection to Minnesota but may not be Minnesota residents at the time. Section 2, another House provision, House-only provision, provides civil law protections for reservist-owned businesses. It allows for a stay of civil court proceedings during the time that the person is in active military service. Going ahead to page, and that carries through, actually through the top of R53. Next provision is a similar provision in both the House and Senate bills that would allow for brevet promotions for soldiers who die during active duty. A brevet promotion is an honorary promotion. And I know the military just mentioned that they would have a comment on this afterwards. The only difference between the Senate and House provisions is that the Senate provision provides an effective date, the day following. The next provision is a House-only provision, Section 4 in the House side on page R53. And this provides employment protections, job protections for family members of service members, and also requires the granting of up to 6 days of unpaid leave for special military events, send-off ceremonies, and so on. And that carries through page R54, the part of R54. On R54, there is another House-only provision. Dealing, as I mentioned, with Section 1, Section 8 is the basic part of that language, setting up the list of deceased soldiers. On R55, we turn to another House-only provision dealing with, House 55 deals with the GI Bill, really House and Senate provision. The key difference on R55 lies in line 1330 on the Senate side and line 4727 on the House side. Both bills increase the target aid amount. The Senate does so by 10% and the House by 20%, a factor of 1.2 versus 1.1. R56, another GI Bill provision. Again, very little difference, except that the House language changes the residence requirements and would allow veterans who were not Minnesota residents at the time of enlistment to partake in the benefits of this program. and that carries completely through R57. There we come to another GI Bill provision. And the key difference here is that on the House side in line 51.4, the House would raise from $2,000 per year to $3,000 per year the total aid amount that a veteran could receive through the Minnesota GI Bill in a given year. You'll see on line 17.6 on the Senate side that the Senate leaves that at $2,000 per year. And the basic difference is that the House would enable a veteran to draw down the $10,000 lifetime amount a little bit faster by allowing them to attend summer school. We'll come to a Senate-only provision on 59.
Mr. Chairman, backing up briefly just generally on the GI Bill provisions, I did want to point out what you see on the Senate side for those provisions is taken from Senate File 2942, which is the Senate Higher Ed Bill. And then also you should be aware that basically what you see is the House language in this side-by-side is included in the working group report on the budget bill on House File 1812. Then taking you to R59 on the Senate side, there are several sections dealing with that basically allow a veteran's motorcycle license plate, sections 1, 2, and 3 shown on that side, add language to existing statutes to allow the creation of a motorcycle license plate. On the bottom of R59 on the Senate side, you see the World War II Memorial Donation Matching Account. This takes money remaining in that account after completion of construction and appropriates it to Veterans Affairs for veterans services and programs. I'll point out there as well, that language is also contained in the working group report and can also be found, although it's not shown here, on the House side of House File 1812. Then on R60, there are some similar provisions. These are all taken from, they're basically identical with a few small technical differences from the bill that transferred the Veterans Homes Board duties to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. That's basically all of R60. At the bottom on the Senate side, there's one tiny difference that specifies that the commissioner's designee is an ex officio non-voting member of the council. The House does not include that language, but the Senate felt it important to clarify they would be non-voting. I should also mention here that that technical bill continues on to R61, and you'll see one other difference there at the very end on the bottom of R61. The Senate provides a June 30th, 2013 expiration date for the advisory council. And then the House basically provides that the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs can disband the council. That would take care of termination on the House side. There is one other minor issue that has come up dealing with the Ombudsman for Long-Term Care. There were some duties created in last year's legislation as far as attending meetings of the Veterans Homes Board. And I have been made aware they need a technical amendment to clarify they would be dealing with this council. I haven't had the opportunity to prepare it yet, but I can make it available soon. Then on R62, there's nearly identical House and Senate language on the veterans cemeteries. This just basically expands the Department of Veterans Affairs authority for cemeteries by recognizing that there could be more than one cemetery and makes some other technical changes. On R63, there is one difference. The House added language. I'll just explain it briefly. They're basically saying no additional staff can be hired for these purposes without for staffing cemeteries without explicit legislative approval. Then on R63, that's just the very bottom there, Section 9 on the Senate side and Section 13 on the House side, is additional technical language related to the transfer of the Veterans Homes Board duties. Then on the top of R64, there's a House-only provision.
Yes, on R64, that House-only provision authorizes the courts, when sentencing a veteran who has been convicted of a crime, to psychological treatment.
And Mr. Chair, that provision is in both the House and the Senate policy, public safety policy bill now that came off both floors recently, so we will be removing that. If that hadn't happened, we would have left it.
Tobacco.
And then on both sides, we have provisions, Section 10 and 11 in the Senate, Section 16 and 17 in the House, that are just more technical language dealing with the veterans' home transfer. And then there's a Senate-only provision.
Mr. Chairman, Section 12 on the bottom of R64 basically authorizes the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to collect funds for the distribution of World War II commemorative medallions to qualifying veterans, provides a timetable and appropriates the money collected for those purposes. Then on R65, the Senate has language dealing with the Veterans Cemetery Trust account. The underlying section here that creates that account, one that's in the statute, section 197.236, subdivision 7, is eliminated on both the Senate and House language. On R62, subdivision 7 is completely stricken. So the Senate provides for the transfer of funds in that account to the permanent development and maintenance account in the Special Revenue Fund, which is an existing account, I believe. That's also in that language. Then there are identical provisions, or nearly identical, on the House and Senate side, Section 14 on the Senate side, dealing with the Mexican-American Veterans plaque in the Capitol. That has been enacted, so I don't think we need to deal with it here, Chapter 184. And then on R66, there's some House-only language.
Mr. Members, turning to R66, the first section deals with actually directs the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to do a feasibility study of the feasibility of looking at non-governmental social service agencies and healthcare providers to provide services for veterans. And those services are intended to be home-based and could include such things as psychological counseling, life skills, rehabilitation, and so on, hospice care, et cetera. On line 53.4, section 19, an important study of the veterans' homes is required. A strategic planning group would be established with a broad range of veterans and legislators, as well as Minneapolis officials and some metro planners, to look at a 25-year time span delivering veteran services that involve veterans' homes, but could potentially go beyond veterans' homes and involve such things as the partnering I talked about in the previous study. That carries through R67, R68, and part of R69. Then on R69, Section 20 on the House side, House-only provision, establishes calls for a county veteran service officers working group to determine how to implement the recommendations of the recent evaluation of the county veteran service offices by the legislative auditor. And that involves, again, a broad range of veterans and veterans officials from around the state. That carries on to R70. And then in the middle of R70 is a third House-only provision that would determine veterans' employment, how veterans' employment is working in state government. And it looks at all three branches of government at a given point in time, which was last year. And then we come to two similar provisions on R71, which are simply technical provisions related to the veteran's home transfer. And finally, there's a repealer on R71 that's slightly different. And I'll point out the difference. The difference is that in line 58.30 on the House side, the first line of that repealer, there's some unique language to the House side dealing with veteran cemeteries and another provision of military law that would repeal a ribbon that was authorized for the Persian Gulf War that wasn't needed because the feds developed such a ribbon. The rest of the repealer on both sides is identical and relates to the veteran's home transfer. And that completes the veterans' articles, unless Mr. Bodden has some comments.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
One minor thing I wanted to point out on the repealers. Mr. Cleary mentioned, I think it's on R71, the House has the repealer of Section 190.17, which I believe is the Persian Gulf War ribbon. That legislation did pass the Senate separately. I failed to note that, putting the side-by-side together. But.
And it's, Mr. Chair, where is it at in the Senate? Passed separately, it's out on the your general orders, or it's where?
Mr. Chairman, it did pass the Senate floor, I believe, as a standalone bill.
Really?
I don't have the bill number.
God, you guys were really looking for work one day, weren't you?
Huh? We do good work.
I know. I wish I was there.
It doesn't take us 5 hours to pass
I
a
know.
Bill with three sentences.
I know.
Chair and members, the last.
It's true. It's true.
There's another, a modification of last year's appropriation, one for administration and financial assistance. It starts on R72, changes on R73. Basically, the Department of Agriculture approached the House concerned that the language in the statute for the Fertilizer Research and Education Council program would prohibit them from spending part of their admin carve-out in the second year. They need to follow up with the folks who received grants under this program and write the report, which is due to the legislature. So they asked to clarify that in order to spend their admin money in fiscal year 2009. And finally, on page R75, there are three house only studies and provision at the top of R75 that basically allows the State Agricultural Society to collect a fee. More than half of the standard fee for expansion of their camping area for the Family Motor Association event in 2008. And Section 35 requires the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute in cooperation with the Department of Ag to create a detailed proposal for licensing and regulating the growth of industrial hemp in Minnesota, but the neither agency would take any actions until the United States Department of Justice Drug Enforcement Administration authorizes the commercial growth of industrial hemp in the United States.
Never done.
That hasn't happened to date. And finally, in Section 36, DHS is contagious fish disease. And this provision would direct the Department of Agriculture, Health, and Natural Resources to get together and develop a plan for detecting and responding to the fish disease in when it does, or if it does, appear in Minnesota. And the plan must include how the joint laboratory facilities of the Department of Agriculture and Health would be used in the
testing. Members, do you have this... I'm going to have this. Missing a copy.
You have two of them? Yeah, I think I had two.
Okay. I think what we'll do then is we'll probably have the staff look through similar. I think that's what we'll do first. And then we'll be moving along here, and then we'll probably switch into a couple things we need to remove. But first, I think we should look to see what's similar. And the plan is to adopt those that are similar. That everybody understand that, so we get that much out of the way. Well, let's start out with the first one, and... whichever staff member wants to explain, let's start right off at the R1, right on the first page.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wasn't sure if you want to do that today.
All right. Now I'm getting it. Friday, that first one will be Friday, so we go to the second one, be pesticide use.
And, Mr. Chairman, there are it's a technical difference on the part that was part of the original Sieben Hansen bill. If you look on... R4, actually it's on R5, you'll see the difference between the new paragraph H on the bottom of the Senate side and the paragraph H on the House side. That's what I mentioned earlier, that there were some technical differences between the two. I think the Senate includes some more items that would be excluded from the from those that would be or could be illegally applying pesticides. But the House does have additional provisions within that section. I don't know if you wanted to discuss paragraphs H today, or if you wanted to just hold off on this completely, because you also have in paragraph on R4, you have that new House language on drift. You've got the two drift provisions in the House side. So I don't know if you want to deal with just H or just leave it.
We'll wait till that Friday for that, too, and we'll put together an amendment for it.
Junkie, do you want to do the same thing on...
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and maybe Representative Junkie, can you explain exactly what you were looking for there on 625 when it says notwithstanding whether or not this was done appropriately or not? I mean, are you saying that it doesn't matter?
Yeah, Senator Murphy, this was an amendment that came on the House floor by Representative Shumper. So it was not part of the original bill, that and I think 5.16 or 1.9. And so those are the two issues we'll have to discuss with what we're having staff look at and others. I think basically they're a repeat of what Minnesota label law is already, quite frankly. You can't misapply chemicals. You can't spray someone on a road. You can't drift by Minnesota label law. Once we get a confirmation of that, in all likelihood, we'd be able to not be redundant, but talk about just removing them. But okay. We want to get confirmation of that.
Do you have a question, Senator or Representative Hamilton?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's federal law as well.
So we'll get confirmation. We can just we can take care of that on Friday quickly once we hear the word.
Okay. Okay. Let's continue.
R7, the third item on the same or similar agriculture. That is exactly the same. That was a department bill. Actually, R7 and R8 are two department bills dealing with technical changes to pesticide statutes. As they're the same, could I just be adopted now?
I'd move the Senate language.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing on R8, I mentioned it before, on 6.25 to 6.26, we have deleting that provision. The Senate passed a separate bill that also includes kind of a cleanup of the language. I don't know if you want to include that here.
What's your suggestion?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if that other bill is going to be passed too, but it's not going to matter except to clean up the statutes a little bit to basically delete those two lines also. So what you would do is just delete everything after the B parent on 6.25 and delete everything on 6.26 before, and then delete the C on 6.27. I mean, we can technically do it, but I don't think I need to describe it all. But basically, just clean that up and take out that paragraph B.
I'll move that, what he just said. Get a motion.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, then if we go on to the next bill, very similar, it's the department bill dealing with food handlers. We can now talk about the difference with the grandfathering of older egg wholesale equipment. But we could adopt this section of the same. That's just one section out of many that's different.
Well, Mr. Chair, I know this was Representative Otremba's bill, and I think you remember the discussion. Maybe you want to explain why we grandfathered in. They removed the grandfather. We left a grandfather in for older egg handling equipment.
Well, Mr. Chair, most of this was Heidrick's concern. It came about with egg handling. Eggs typically can withstand up to 45 degrees, and the department wanted them to go down to 41, which is the cooling method for most cooling food. Hydrogen was concerned about those handlers that didn't have another refrigerator, so to speak, and so we put some letters in about making sure that the egg handlers that didn't have the 2008 type of refrigerating. As a former nutritionist, I know that eggs can be at 45, and I think it's probably a trucking issue. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you. Just to add to that, Representative Heigerkin's concern was the cost to upgrade for some of these smaller family facilities would basically put them out of business, and that's why he was asking for the grandfather clause. And again, like we heard on the testimony was saying that there was not a health concern with the 45 degrees that they could withstand that. So that's why the grandfather piece was.
Mr. Chair and members, just to add to that, Representative Heidgerken did work with the department. They might want to speak about whether they support or oppose this, but they did help clarify this concept. So you'll see on line 14.6 on the House side, equipment in use by a wholesale food handler, that was added. The exemption or the grandfathering was reinstated, but then that phrase was added because under the state's food code, eggs sold at retail do already have to be at 41 degrees, so this would just apply to the wholesaler. And then you'll see a similar provision on 14.14 clarifies that eggs at retail or for sale by a retail food handler must be at 41. So I think we really tried to tighten down what Representative Heidgerken was at.
Mr. Chair, my name is Quinn Cheney. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I would just confirm what Mr. Sullivan said. The department worked very closely with Representative Heidgerken, and he had some concerns about how this would affect constituents who don't need to necessarily make some of the upgrades, and we have just tightened up the language to make sure that it conforms with the food code and allowed so that we don't bring anybody else in that and it reflects the food code.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, when in the last time in Minnesota did we have a foodborne illness from eggs? I mean,
in the show.
On kind of a big picture, a lot of illnesses.
Isn't there someone else?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, isn't there just a swan's salmonella thing years ago?
I'm going to ask.
Well, I was talking. I'm kind of narrowing in on these egg wholesalers that y'all were talking about. When's the last time they caused a problem?
And Mr. Chair, I concur. I don't think it is a problem. And frankly, it's for the small organic or the little, some of these co-ops out there that have the older equipment, and they're getting by just fine, and we want to make sure that they continue to operate. And the Department of Health, along with Ag, has concurred, and if Senator Vickerman wants to adopt the House language, we can move on.
Well, I certainly don't want to put any rural person out of business, I can tell you that. That's not.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the House language then.
Okay. Senator Murphy moves adoption of the House language. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, just curious if there was discussion in the House on as this equipment it becomes obsolete or no longer repairable, are they allowed to go out and buy other old equipment, maybe from a producer that's going out of business, and kind of keep their grandfather status, or do they have to upgrade at that point to the new stuff?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we did discuss that, Representative Tremba, and the answer was yes, because there is functioning equipment, again, that you might pick up at an auction or when people go out of business, and again, to keep these smaller people in business rather than having to buy brand new equipment somewhere that they couldn't afford. So I think, and again, the department or Mr. Sullivan or Representative Tremba could confirm. I remember that discussion, though.
I would think it would work very good for organic farmers. And some ropes, you have a lot of them down in your area. Nothing wrong with.
I mean, it has to, Mr. Chair, it has to function. It still has to keep the temperature at 45. It has to be inspected. It's nothing that you're doing under the cloak of night or something. So I don't think the equipment was the concern.
long as it was functioning.
I know who you're talking about.
I was at the meeting.
Okay. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chair, if I could just clarify.
You made a motion to
be adopting House sections 10 through 18. Page R8, the bottom of R8 through the bottom of
R19. Okay. That's a Murphy motion.
On the Murphy motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Keep on going now. Trying to get out of here.
I agree.
We're the ones who are. Right. Now, where are we on? R15 or?
And then, again, Mr. Chair, I think we'll leave that till Friday, just confirm, and then we'll probably remove that section. We can do that quickly, but right Friday on that line.
Yeah, because it was junky that traveled on its own.
Yeah, and we'll see where it is if it gets signed, and we'll double check with the Board of Animal Health on that.
And we'll go to R16.
Mr. Chairman, what you have here is, as described earlier, the Senate has an expiration date of 2014 for the next gen board. House basically allows it to continue indefinitely by repealing the expiration date. And so I guess it's a matter of what you want to do.
Again, Mr. Chair, I don't know why the Senate did what they did. I know we just took the recommendation of the Next Gen Board, which you sit on, and along with me, and we put that in, which was just to repeal the sunset. Now, I don't know if the Senate has some policy that they just like to keep extending sunsets over and over again.
But. Senator Ropes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, I asked the same question related to other boards that did not have a termination date, and I was told that they periodically do like to just bring it up for review to make sure it's still necessary instead of just allowing groups to gather and just go on forever and ever without any kind of intentional review and saying, yes, this is a good thing. We still have it still serves a purpose. So I needed to add effective dates and sunset dates on one of my bills, and that was the reason I was told. And actually, it makes sense to me, because otherwise, we commission some of these things, and they could just go on forever. It gives them a chance to bring their work back to the legislature, report off, and then just get another blessing if need be.
I believe Senator Rest is very, very tough and very firm on that.
That's exactly who I got the recommendation from, Senator.
I don't have a problem. I'd move the Senate language.
Okay. Senator, I can call you Senator.
Don't do that.
I'm upgrading you. Representative Junkie moves the adoption of the Senate language on the next gen board extension. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
And Mr. Chairman, R17. The next one you have is the MALC, the Ag Education Leadership Council. And I think you're probably best off to do the House language on that, section 21 on page R17, because they do have the effective date, day following an act. And I think that's necessary because of the 2008 expiration.
I'll move the House language.
Representative Hamilton had his hand up first, okay. If that's okay.
Well, thank you, Senator.
Hamilton moves that we accept they're both the same, the MALC extension. I believe you sat on that board the same as I do, Senator.
Yes, and I was going to point that out as well, along with Representative Otremba. And so I'd like to move the House language. Okay. And Dill. And Senator Dill, I'm sorry.
All those in favor? Say aye.
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 Opposed? Adopted. Now we're going to get into R18 and R21.
Mr. Chairman, did you want to deal with the animal chiropractic today?
Maybe we could. Let's see how. Let's see what else we can get through before we talk about that.
Just set it
aside for now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then you have the Board of Veterinary Medicine. That starts on page R26, and. Generally, it's the same. You do have some additional language on the House side, then a little bit of additional language on the Senate side. If you look on page R, excuse me, but basically, the House has some additional language. Well, first of all, on page R24, it should be. I think I'm a little too far forward there. No, let's just do with the Senate language right now. R25, you have, and that's basically deals with the chiropractor. Basically, just a cross reference on page R25, 23.18. I don't know if you want to deal with that when you deal with the chiropractor, or if you want to deal with that when you deal with this. Might be good to deal with it here, as long as you know you're going to do something in the chiropractor
yep,
area to decide whether or not you want to have this cross-reference in the vet med statutes. And then in R22, you have that additional House language dealing with the discharge papers for somebody in the armed forces. And then you also have that proof of residency and that it expires at the same time in the legal status. It's on the bottom on the House side in R22. It's 225 through 228, and then on 3.2 to 3.3. That's the other difference.
Mr. Chair, members, on R21, the House has a similar provision on 1.22 for the license application of the House as a United States citizen or legal resident.
Senator Dill?
Senator Dill, I would assume everything's probably... This was all in bill form, members, and passed the House floor and was inserted in here, so I don't know who was carrying it in the Senate. You were. So this was your bill, then. We just put it in our House side.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, of the various additional words that have been added on both sides, I personally don't see any problem with any of it. But I wonder if we need to check with somebody that knows more about it than I do.
Well, we can set it aside, Senator Dill, if you just want to confirm with the veterinarians before Friday. We can adopt.
I'll just check with the people who understand us.
Right. Let's set that aside then until Friday. We can do that quick, then. We'll get the word from them. And we're skipping B20 for now, right?
And then, so, Mr. Chairman, it gets you all the way to R53. Excuse me, R-40-43. It's Section 53 on the Senate side. And the language on R-42 is where that, well, you see the language. And this is the one I described earlier where the Senate makes sure that the money that's passed through is available until spent and then allows carry forward only of the money that's used for administration of the Ag DMP loan program.
Staff have a recommendation?
Mr. Chair and members, I think.
Okay, I'd move the Senate language on that.
And Representative Junkie's motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So adopted. Now we'll go to the next page, top of page 3.
That's what we just did. We need to go to, oh, we're on a different.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you got the next gen grants.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the same, so you could adopt either side on that one. On R43 to 48.
Okay. I'll move the Senate language on that.
Senator Junkie moves adoption of the Senate language, next-gen grants. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now we go. Now we need to go, members. Anhydrous ammonia tanks. I don't know. We only have that in the Senate side.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair and members, now after we finish the same and similar, the rest of the provisions in under the different category are all either only on one side or the other. Mm-hmm. We want to step through those now, or we want to move to the veterans.
To do the same and similar on veterans first to get through them.
Oh, we can do that.
Go to the next page and start there. Let's move to the veterans for now. We'll see how far we get. We can always come back to some of those then if we have time today yet.
We'll start with R51.
Mr. Chairman, the veterans list blends together items that are House or Senate only and same and similars. The first similar item that I think you could take up is on page R53, and that's section 1 on the Senate side. As I described, the only difference there is the effective date. The Senate side has an immediate effective date. I think if I remember, the Department of Military Affairs like that. So,
Mr. Chair, the Department of Military Affairs, I believe, has an amendment for this. I don't know if you have it ready today, or we could do it Friday if you don't.
Let's do it today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Colonel Eric Olness, Director of Government Relations. What I want to do is bring up an amendment, and I just found out earlier today that we're going to be issuing a combat infantry badge to a Sergeant Golnick. He's a Korea-era veteran who was wounded for the second time and evacuated from Korea the day before he is to receive his battlefield commission. And so on May 12th, we're going to award him his combat infantry badge, and we're looking at doing a brevet promotion from sergeant to staff sergeant. But we found that was really inappropriate based on the circumstances. So, as I said, I just learned about that earlier today. So I'd like to offer the following amendment, and I'll provide it to staff for clarification afterwards. But basically adding in as a subparagraph C on R53 after on the Senate side 1.18, or on the House side after 42.14, if a service member is wounded or killed after a battlefield commission has been approved and was pending, and or if a service member was enrolled in an officer commissioning program at the time of injury or death, the person may be breveted at the rank of second lieutenant or ensign as appropriate, following separation or discharge from military service. So, members, essentially what they do is, if these people are going to become an officer, instead of just promoting to the next enlisted rank, we'd do the totally honorary designation of calling them a second lieutenant or ensign based on the service that they were in. And I'll provide this to staff for
Mr. Chair, editorial. Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
I'd suggest that you give that to staff, who's ever a page, can get that copied off so we can have it before us. I'm a little uncomfortable doing amendments that are that long without us at least seeing them. Not that I disagree with any of it. I just think for future protocol, that'll be a good idea. And then we can just come back and we'll do that in a few minutes, if that's all right, Senator Vickerman. And,
sure, that's fine.
The other thing we may want to do on the military, I know that you're – well, they're not marked same or similar like the ag was. We may want to just go through these one at a time, starting at the top, because I think we can maybe come to some pretty quick agreement on these, regardless if they were Senate or House. And let's just talk about the veteran stuff and try and go through them from top to bottom, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair. I think
that's fine.
We can maybe work through them quicker that way than bouncing around. So if staff wants to just start with the R-51 and R-54, I think, is that deceased military personnel, and that was actually Representative Bigham's bill, and she can explain it.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, may I ask you, can you hear my voice? Does it project loud enough? I was told that
just make sure it's very quiet. If you can get close to a mic or move your chair so you're more in front of it.
Okay. Well, members, I should mention I'm pretty deaf, and I can't tell how loud I'm speaking. But it's service-connected, so it kind of... okay, so I'll try, but please use thumb signals if you need to. Mr. Chairman and members, on page 51, section 1, and then again on page 54, section 8, we set up, the House only sets up a list of, requires the commissioner to set up a list of deceased service members for both historical and other reasons, but not to determine aid or benefits in any fashion.
Mr. Chair, you might want Representative Bingham to explain that.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, this is your and I's bill.
I
asked you to introduce, and you did, and I appreciate that. I had a constituent, Representative Slawick, and has a mutual friend who's my constituent, and her brother was killed in the line of duty, and she kept seeing his name appear as if he was from Wisconsin, and he was from here, but for some technical reason, it ended up that it was in Wisconsin. I don't know if somehow on his forms or something it came from Wisconsin. So Representative Slawik, being the good-natured person she is, started to attempt to try and help her correct this. And it turned out that the Associated Press is the only organization that keeps track of lists of deceased military personnel. So I spoke with Mr. Cleary, and then I spoke with the department, and it turns out that the department is just starting to do that now. And so they were very supportive of this to be used in ceremonial purposes. I worked with Representative Holberg and Representative Coles to protect data privacy. They had a couple concerns, so we fixed that, and we made it very specific that it cannot be used for benefits. And that is it. It had no real questions or concerns. There was some technical. We had a good discussion in Veterans Committee about the wording so that it would incorporate all service conflicts so that we weren't just – I had originally had a date in there, and then we took that out and made it very general so that it's going all the way back. But it's a good provision, and I think it's something that we need to do, and hopefully we can set a trend for other states to start doing this and taking the responsibility to have a list so that we can use it in ceremonial purposes.
Representative Bigham, you said you've already checked with the data privacy, because I can't ever find out anything about anybody. but you've taken care of that in this.
Mr. Chair, absolutely. Yes.
Senator Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bingham, thank you for carrying this bill. I'm surprised, actually, to find out that nobody keeps track of this. And is this true not only at a state level or a federal level? Because I know there's a lot of federal information that they don't like to share with state-level departments. And so can you explain that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator, I would defer to the department. I know staff is in here if they want to answer that. But my recollection is that sometimes the federal government will share, but it's not a proactive approach. It's that they have to go through the process of requesting it. But, Mr. Chair, if staff would like to answer or confirm.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Erickson Ropes, the lists that we have available to us are already on the National Archives website. So that information is not, it's already public information, and we'll be just taking that information. Nothing that contains Social Security numbers or discharge papers will be on the website, only that information in National Archives, if that helps answer the question.
Mr. Chair, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Senator, but I think what we were trying to confirm is that you are provided the information from the federal department, but you have to request it and obtain it. It isn't just handed over so that then the department you work for can combine it. I mean, you have to proactively go and obtain that information.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bingham, actually, the soldier in their DD-214 checks a box that says they release that information to their home of record, and that's how we get it. If they do not check that box, we don't get it.
Any other questions? Representative Bingham, would you like to move your bill?
I would. I would like to move that language. Section 8 of the House. And the other section, section 1. Yeah.
Any further discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted. Go on to the next one.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, section 2 on R51 is another House-only provision. This section would provide protection to the businesses of soldiers who are deployed, reserve-owned businesses. The protection would be in the form of civil law protections. It would allow for a stay of civil law proceedings while the person is away at war or other federal service. And if a default judgment happens to be entered in that civil action, the court, upon request, the court entering the judgment must reopen the judgment for reconsideration after the soldier returns.
Well, members, I like the concept, but do we interfere with the court system by some way by doing this? Or?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, this was brought by Military Affairs if they want to come and talk. It was a Tinkelstead bill and amendment in the Rules Committee. I'm not sure who the Senate author was, but maybe you can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Eric Allness. Yes, what it does is it provides the ability for the courts to extend the stay. So it does not limit the courts anyway, but it provides the courts the authority and the freedom to extend to protect those veteran-owned businesses during the time that the service member is deployed. And that's something we deliberately crafted in that way because the bottom line is we didn't want to have the service members' families taking advantage of the law either. So if we left it with the courts, that would prevent the individuals from maybe taking advantage of using the deployment to protect themselves against a reasonable lawsuit or something like that. So it leaves authority within the courts.
And Mr. Chair, this was a Foley bill.
Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wonder, does somebody know why we say reservist-owned business? I mean, how about National Guard-owned business? Or, you know, the term reservist-owned, is that broad enough to cover everybody?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, it is. Reservist is a broader term that includes members of the all seven reserve components, including the National Guard.
Any further discussion? This was a Senator Foley's, I believe, bill. Senator Robes, would you like to move the adoption, or if you'd like?
Yes, I'll so move.
On the Representative Senator Robes' amendment, motion to accept protection for reservist-owned businesses. Say all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now, do you want to go back,
Mr. Chair?
Let's go back to this.
I'll move the amendment first of all. We can adopt that, and then we can move that language.
Representative Junkie moves adoption of this amendment. It's been passed out. Everybody has it. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay.
And then I'd move adoption of that section for the brevet promotions.
Representative Junkie moves adoption of the motion.
Senate language, right? Senate language.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Mr. Chairman, on page R53, section 4, another house-only provision, this provision provides protections to family members of service members and its employment protection. And it also requires the granting of up to 6 days of unpaid leave per year for those members to attend special military events involving their soldiers.
Mr. Chair, we're working, I believe, on an amendment. National Federation of Independent Business and others had a concern with the section there. Do you have the amendment already? Is it copied?
No.
Maybe if staff could copy that amendment off and we can move on, we'll come back to that once we have the amendment. Then I think the language is probably all right.
It's actually like six words, but
we'll move on to the next one.
Mr. Chairman, we've already talked about the house-only provision, Section 8 on R54, and adopted it. So turning to page R55, we have the first GI Bill, Minnesota GI Bill provision. And this provision primarily differs in on line 1330 Senate side versus 4727 on the House side. Both sides increase the cost of attendance, which is the target amount for the aid amount that goes to the soldier. This is the last dollar in. The soldier has to apply for all other forms of military-related and veterans-related educational assistance before they can apply for this program. Then, if that does not exceed the target amount, the cost of attendance, they may receive a grant under this program. Now, the Senate raises that target amount by 10%, the House by 20%. 1.1 versus 1.2. Most of the rest of that provision is identical or nearly so.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, we're going to double check. This was included in 1812. And we had a fiscal note for it, and we're not sure if it's with House or the Senate language and all these sections that match that fiscal note. And we already approved in our working group. Senator Dill was there that day, too, and Representative Trimba. We've already approved the dollar amount, and we just need to make sure which side it matches up with. So I think we'll wait till Friday. We'll just get that taken care of, and it'll be a quick amendment on Friday.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, on R56, Section 11, on the House side, Section 19 on the Senate side, also relate to the GI Bill. And the principal difference here is that lines on the House side, 4913 through 4915, changes the residency requirements. Now, they change it in a way that really broadens it to include any veteran of the current war who has served since 9/11, who moves to Minnesota and becomes a resident.
And Mr. Cleary, I think we should just skip all that now, because again, the fiscal note will match even that, because it's we'll check and see what the fiscal note matches on all the GI Bill stuff, and we'll just do that on Friday.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and Representative Junkie, that would include the third GI Bill provision in R58 as well.
Correct.
Yeah. So yep. Moving to R59, we have a Senate-only provision.
Mr. Chairman, as I described this previously, this is on page R59, sections on the Senate side, sections 1, 2, and 3, and basically just adds the authorization for a motorcycle plate to the existing veterans license plate. Authorization.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Senate language.
Representative Junkie moves the Senate language. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is also, it appears, is a Senate-only provision. Again, I think this is in House File 1812 on the House side. And that's the World War II Memorial Donation Match Account language. It's also included in the recommendations from the working group, so I don't know how you want to handle that.
And that was my bill. I'll move the Senate language.
Junkie moves the Senate language. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
Then, Mr. Chairman, turning to R60, you have the language relating to the transfer of the Veterans Homes Board. That's basically all of R60 with then the one difference there is the Senate technical amendment on line 49.33. It just clarifies the ex officio membership of the commissioners. Also, it's a non-voting membership. And then moving ahead to R61, it's also all of R61, the one difference there being that the Senate provides an expiration date for the council and the House provides that the commissioner may disband the council at any time.
What's the expiration date? 2013. All right, I'll move the Senate language. We don't want to get in trouble with Senator Rest.
Okay. Representative Junkie moves the Senate language.
That's our 60-61.
Yep, 61. Yep. All any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Then, Mr. Chairman, moving ahead to R62, you have the Veterans Cemetery language. All of R62, I believe, is identical. And then on R63, there's a minor technical difference in the way it's constructed. If you look at line 46.33 on the House side, that clause is moved ahead within the deleted language. But basically, it's functionally identical with the exception of subdivision 12 on the House side in the middle of R63. The House, that's part of this grouping of subdivisions here, and the House provides no staff can be hired or allocated for the Veterans Cemetery without explicit legislative approval.
No, not yet.
Mr.
Chair, we went over this in our fiscal working group also, and this is carried over from there too. The reason it says no staff right now is because there's no cemetery right now, and the original language had actually appropriated and moved ahead with hiring staff. We think it's a good idea to come back next year in a budget year. The department's agreeable. And they'll come and tell us what their needs are. Frankly, they're going to be utilizing staff from Ripley, and they already have two or three people there who can manage things until then. But actually, until there's an actual internment up there and we're actually taking care of grave sites, the need for staff is very minimal. And so that could be a year, 2 years, 5 years down the line. We don't know. So we just simply put in there that there's no staff other than what they currently have for Ripley hired for this cemetery until we approve it in our budget.
Representative Junkie, what, you know, sometimes you got to have staff to get the cemetery up to snuff. Does that stop that?
No, Mr. Chair and members, it does not, because first of all, it's on DNR land up there, and they're cooperating. So, in likelihood for land preparation cases, they and or the military, who takes care of it down at Ripley now, will take care of that. But again, department has their own people at Ripley. They're shaking their heads yes down there that will oversee this.
Senator Dale?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I zeroed in on those two lines there, and I really thought they were probably inappropriate lines to tie the hands of the executive branch who's trying to manage their resources and take care of things. And when you look at the language here, it says no staff may be hired for or allocated. You said they're going to take the staff from Fort Ripley and use them over at that new cemetery, but that would be allocating staff to that.
Senator Dill, I'd remove that. We can remove that allocated language.
Well, I think we should just remove the whole two lines.
Well,
just give them some
Senator
flexibility.
Senator Dill and members, if we allow them to hire staff, that's a fiscal note, and that's a tail that we don't have right now in our fiscal budget, which is what we went over in 1812. So that's why the language is there, because the original intent was for them to go ahead and hire staff and move ahead. But we haven't given them money to do that. So, you know, you're right. They can't do it anyway unless they're going to take it out of their existing resources, because we do not have money allocated for staff.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, I don't know that we need to tell them everything they can't do, because that would be a lot of things. And just because, you know, if those two lines were not there, and just let them use their own best judgment, they wouldn't be able to hire people unless they had the money anyway. And why would they hire somebody if they didn't have the money?
Mr. Chairman, we have this department come up and see what their plans are for this. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear a thing Senator Dill was saying.
Are you the two lines of language are, we want to make sure that your Ripley people can work up there. I would assume if we take allocated out, just says you can't hire yet for that cemetery without our approval. Are you okay with that? Should we take the allocated out so your Ripley folks can work up there?
I'm going to have your name for the record, otherwise they'll think I said it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Christine Keel, Department of Veterans Affairs. Representative Junkie, it would be best if we could take allocated out so we could use members of the current staff at the Little Falls Cemetery until we get the Northern Cemetery in place. But at some point, yes, we will need staff to run that cemetery. We anticipate sharing the director, that he would be over both cemeteries. We anticipate that his assistant will be able to cover both cemeteries, but we still need the grave diggers and maintenance staff up at that cemetery, because we were anticipating 500 burials a year up at the Northern Cemetery.
I see some very important people down at that end shaking their heads up and down, so whatever you're saying must
that'll
be
work.
Right.
Mr. Chair, what I would do is move the House language, and then as part of that amendment, I would delete on 47.16 the words or allocate to.
Mr. Chairman, there are two other related items elsewhere in the bill that you may want to consider in one motion. On R65, on the Senate side, Section 13 transfers the funds that are in the one of the subdivisions that's repealed there. And they transfer them to the permanent development maintenance account. If you don't have this section with it, what would happen is basically under existing law, they just roll into the general fund. And then from a technical perspective, there are two repealers. They're at the very end of the, they're on R71. the repealer of Section 197.236, Subdivision 7 and 10. You can do those as well as striking the entire subdivision. The reviser just prefers that it gets shown that way. So you can include that and take care of the whole cemetery package.
All right. Mr. Chair, I would move the various language, part of it Senate, part of it House, that the staff just discussed for the cemetery with the amended language, the deletion of the allocation.
Any more discussion? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now I believe we've got the handout.
We've got the amendment.
Amendment here.
This is Bigham's amendment, if she wants to move it and explain it.
Mr. Chair, I would move this is to the section regarding family service, and after speaking to the NFIB, the proposed amendment would be to add language that would say a misdemeanor penalty does not apply to subdivision 2. The reasoning is if you tell somebody if they don't do something, it's an automatic misdemeanor on some sort of administrative line. And so they just wanted to make sure that nobody was going to get charged with a misdemeanor if they didn't do it. And there is a testifier here. There was just concern brought up, so.
Hickey, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. Represent 14,000 businesses across the state. Appreciate Representative Bigham's amendment. The thought is that this is really a civil dispute in the workforce, and the whole employment world is in under the civil law system. Under this section of the statute, somebody can already take a cause of action and sue for damages and exemplary damages, and really urge you to keep these kind of smaller disputes in the civil law system. And we just really feel a misdemeanor penalty is not appropriate. In this area of the statute, there is a misdemeanor and gross misdemeanor penalties for things that are way more egregious, discriminating against people in the uniform, the bizarre act of interfering with somebody trying to join the service, and other things that are much more serious. And but I would really urge you to put this under the civil system and remove the misdemeanor penalty.
Discussion? And I believe we should move the amendment.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the amendment and then the bill. We haven't adopted this amendment yet.
I'd move the amendment and the section of the bill. That is section.
Move the amendment first, then we'll do this.
Well, I'll move the amendment first.
Representative Bigham's amendment, that would be HDA 748, the way I read it. We all know what it is. Sir?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bigham, may I suggest that as long as the misdemeanor penalty would be removed, maybe we should remove also the word unlawful. We could, in line 1.5, we could replace that with prohibited. So it would be prohibited, but it would not be unlawful or have any criminal penalties.
She can incorporate that.
I can incorporate that in, Mr. Chair. I'd be more than happy to. Thank you, Mr. Cleary.
That'd be on line 1.5, you want to strike the unlawful? You can put that into your amendment or into your amendment.
Yep, I'll incorporate it in.
Sure. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted. Now we're back to the article.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would move the House language for the employment protection of family members of military personnel section of the.
Representative Bigham moves adoption of the House language.
As amended.
R53. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
See, we did the cemeteries, right? Mm-hmm. 63.
R63. Mr. Chairman, at the bottom of R63, this is a related item that we didn't pick up earlier. It's just a technical portion of the transfer of the Veterans Home Board duties. That's just Section 9 on the Senate side. You can take that.
This one you just corrected, right?
And while you're at it, if you want to clean up the rest of that package, there are additional changes related to that at the very end of the Veterans section on R71, Section 15 on the Senate side does that, and all of the repealers shown for Chapter 198 plus the rules. You could include those and take care of that, the rest of that bill.
Mr. Chairman, I believe in addition on R64, there are two other small provisions, Section 10 and 11 on the Senate side and Section 16 and 17 on the House side, if we haven't already taken care of that.
Mr. Chairman, that's right. Those could be included in that motion to finish the Veterans Home Board transfer.
I'd move that language, all of it.
A junkie motion in discussion.
That's on the Senate side, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Everybody understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would move to strike section R64, the next, the courts and the veterans' mental health. That's, we can remove that. That's in both bills in public safety policy.
Mr. Chairman?
So we don't need to adopt those.
Perhaps,
yes.
Perhaps I could just remind our chairman that the courts had agreed to that language. They helped draft it.
But again, it was, Mr. Chair, that was put onto the House bill on the floor the other day. So we'll let Representative Paymar worry about that from here on out. And who's his counterpart, Foley? So do we need to just not adopt it, or do we need to actually strike it?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, Judge, that's
adopt.
Right. You can just leave it alone.
All right.
We won't include it in the report. The next item I think you could take up would be on R64 on the Senate side. It's a Senate-only provision on the World War II service medallions. That was Senator Kubley's bill. And basically, as I described earlier, it just allows the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to collect the money for and distribute the World War II service medallions.
So there's, Mr. Chair, there's no cost to this? Is that correct? They actually collect the money from the service organizations or the veterans themselves and place an order?
Yep.
Senator Kogan, would you like to move?
I'll move Senate the position? Senate language there in Section 12, R64.
Senator Kogan's motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Mr. Chairman and members, moving ahead to R66, we have three House-only provisions on that page and ensuing pages. The first is Section 18 on the House side. That would do a feasibility study of partnering in the delivery of veteran services.
Mr. Chairman.
We don't need to do that.
Pardon?
We don't need to adopt the Mexican. We skipped over the Mexican-American. But we're not going to adopt that because that's passed as a standalone. All right.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Jucky, it's actually enacted. It is
enacted.
A chapter
okay.
In law.
So we'll skip that one.
That's a fair question.
How about the next one?
I guess on why don't we skip down to R70 and 71. We'll skip the others right now above that, the House language only. For the study, I think Representative Severson is here. I think that was his bill, so we might as well do that now. R70 and 71.
And Mr. Chairman, I had it. Mr. Chairman and Representative Junkie, the only question I have on these, I think there's three or four House provisions here that are asking for studies. Are these going to be, the cost going to be covered by current appropriations?
Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, they're being, the appropriations are being carried in 1812. I think there's $250,000 being carried over there for the department that matches up with this language. But we'll maybe go over those later today or Friday. Let's just skip those for now. And
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this study for veterans' employment in state government was precipitated through a bill that started to carry through regarding veterans' preference in 1975. Veterans' preference was drastically altered in that it took a lot of the teeth out of the ability for the for the veteran to get hired through the state and local government. And as we worked with the Department of Employee Relations, we came to a negotiation point where we basically said, in order to really take a look at how badly this has, and the issue really being, do we have veterans that are getting out of the service, and then are they getting the veterans' preference that was intended in the original version of the bill? And just to lay some groundwork, that bill had that provision had been in since 1939 into 1975 when it was changed dramatically, which took a lot of the ability for veterans to receive a type of preference. There's two systems. One is a point system on the state side, and then the local side was an exam system, or vice versa. So what this provision does is it goes back, it requires the state government to go back, take a look at how many veterans we currently have, and what that whether that force has been diminishing, and whether we're really proportionally hiring the number of vets that we should be hiring. I think it becomes very, very important that we take a look at this, particularly with the soldiers that we've got coming back who are being activated, then coming back and seeking employment. Sometimes we ask the civil sector to be out there and make sure that these guys get hired back. But if we as a state are unwilling to step up to the plate and say, you know what, we're going to give these individuals some preference and give them a backfall, we aren't doing our job. That was the intent in this, is to verify that, in fact, there are some issues with this. And I would stand for some questions.
Representative Severson, the question arose, and I think you can answer it. Doer has agreed to do this for no cost. Is that right? There's no fiscal note with this section of the bill?
That's correct. Yes,
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Severson, how long is it going to take them to get this information together?
Representative Severson.
There were actually, in the negotiations process, the judiciary branch is required to collect the information and get back. There was some contention that they did not want to go through the executive finance department, so they were reporting directly back. But I believe the study says report back in January of 2009.
Ms. Murphy, would you like to move the House language?
She's not here.
Who's she?
Representative Murphy?
Oh, Senator Murphy.
Oh, I was kidding.
We have two.
Come on.
Two
I know. Neither one of them
are
here.
They're not here. Senator Murphy.
Yeah, I'll move the House language.
Senator Murphy moves the House language. Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Representative Junkie, who prevails. Sees that report?
That's R-70 to 71, the study of veterans' employment in state government.
Okay.
House side, Representative Severson just explained it, and we just adapted it.
Who do they report back to? Mr. Chair, I think the question was, who do they report back to?
Representative Severson?
Yes.
Who do they report back to? Who gets the information? How can we?
Right.
How do we get to review that after January 9th?
Or January 09.
The commissioner, I'm sorry, and I think it's line 5722, the commissioner must submit a report to the Employer Veterans Affairs in the executive branch to the chairs of the House and Senate Policy and Finance Committees having jurisdiction over
so
the
our committees will be getting that report. Very good. Thank you, Representative Severson. R-71, revisor's instructions.
Mr. Chairman, you've already adopted that as part of that earlier package on the transfer of the Veterans Fund Board.
And then we have some additional repealers in R-71, or have we done all those two?
Mr. Chairman, the only one remaining, you've adopted everything except on the House side, Section 190.17, which is the Persian Gulf War ribbon.
So I would move that final repealer that's still laying out there for adoption. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's adopted. Mr. Chair, I would suggest now that we go back and start working our way through the different ag provisions. I think some of them we can agree on, some we'll have to set aside, or at least we can talk about them and understand where we're at. So we're on the different ag provisions, page 3.
Mr. Chairman, did you want to start with, you said you were going to do the waste pest site.
The waste pest site, I think we will wait till Friday. So and the anhydrous, I think, Mr. Chair, will wait also at this point, just because we're doing some checking with the Senate author on that. The TB fencing, maybe we should get a better idea. I don't know if the board, I know their rep is here. Mr. Chair, maybe we hear about the DNR TB fencing. That was a House provision. Again, we had fairly intensive testimony. We had DNR and Board of Animal Health in that day, and they had all agreed to make this transfer of authority for fencing over to the Board of Animal Health. So if that language can be confirmed by their legislative liaison who's at the table, that might be helpful.
Mr. Chair, Quinn Cheney with the Board of Animal Health and the Department of Agriculture. If we could wait to adopt this language, that would be my preference. I would like to check because this language is moving also separately along with some other animal disease control pieces in another bill. So I just would like to make sure that.
Well, if you double check that and get back to us, we'll do it Friday then.
Thank you.
And we need to go down to.
The next one's the blending pumps.
Blending policy.
R32 through 34 and R37 House ethanol blending policy. That's the blender pumps. And, Mr. Chair, I think we have that description. I don't know that there's a problem with it. It simply puts into statute the labeling of the blender pumps, what they're used for, and then asks the department to start pursuing a waiver for other cars other than flex fuel to use those blender pumps. And obviously they can't until a waiver is granted. So it just simply introduces that process. So I wouldn't think there'd be any problems with that from anyone. Again, we already have the blender pumps out there. This just kind of codifies it. So if someone wants to move that language, or I'll move the language. I'm looking for the senators to get excited, just jump up and down and say, oh, man, I'll take the House language.
I'd be honored to move that language.
I know you have some out in your area, too, so.
Honored.
Skogan moved the House language.
Skogan moved the House only
on the ethanol blending.
On ethanol blending policies. Everybody understand? Motion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Now, Senate only horse racing. Didn't we take out the gambling?
We will not adopt that because it's so. Just put not adopt. We don't have to do anything. Yep.
And we need to go down to.
Teddy will wait a little bit. Senator Dill, we can work on that the next couple days.
That's fine.
Senator Dill.
Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, I think the chiropractor language, veterinary chiropractor language, is in good shape, and we have the chief author in the House, and I'm here, the chief author in the Senate. If you want to do something right now, I'd move the House language. There's a few additions you put in that are better than what I have in the Senate side. So,
okay.
If that's okay, I think we're past the controversy on that. We can just move on. And so I'm looking on page here. It's page R18.
R18 through R21.
R21, the middle of R21.
Senator Dillon, you're looking at R18 and R21, just the chiropractic?
Yeah, this section.
It starts on R18.
The whole section.
And runs for 3.5 pages to the middle of R21.
Mr. Chair, we're, I believe, fine with that. Representative Conan can comment.
Representative
Conan.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if we should pick up the Senate language, line
That section has, Mr. Chairman, that has to do with the Veterinary Practice Act.
Right. We'll do that separately.
That I want to double-check to make sure you got everything right on that, because there's several more additions here and there that I just wanted to double check that.
We'll just skip that for okay. now, and we'll come back Friday with that whole veterinary section. But we'll do the animal chiropractic section. And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, I mean, you could adopt just that. So we'll make sure we get just to make sure we don't lose track.
Just
of these
those
things.
Two lines.
Just those two lines, just to make sure it's included. I mean, you'll be doing them with the vet stuff the other day, but just while
That'd
you're
that'd be fine if Senator Dill wants to incorporate line. That. Or set.
Is there a motion?
Question. Senator Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dill, when we were coming in, I was handed a piece of paper saying that there had been some a compromise reached. Could you talk a little bit more about what specifically that is? Because I know we've heard this bill for many hours in many committees, and I know that you tried to put on amendments all along the way, and
I think Representative Conan did the compromise on the floor the other day, too.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I understand where we are on this.
All right, Mr. Chairman and Senator Erickson Ropes, if you go to page R18, and on the Senate side, line 16.34, there's some words there that say, but is not limited to. Those are the five words I intended to take out on the Senate side, but the amendment was drafted to take out. If you go to the House side on line 20.8, in the middle of that sentence, it says, but are not limited to. What happened in the Senate amendment is we took out the wrong five words, and the House left the right five words in. And that's the main reason I'm taking the House language is because we've got the amendment mixed up.
Project a little more so the audience can't hear you.
Do I need to repeat that? I don't think so.
No.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, Senator Dill, so you're saying that it actually is broadening the scope of practice there rather than limiting it.
Well, the House took out the but is not limited to in the right place, and so it limits the practice of veterinary chiropractic to what you see on lines on the House side 9.24. So the animal chiropractic diagnosis and treatment means treatment that includes identifying and resolving vertebral subluxation complexes, spinal manipulation, and manipulation of the extremity articulations of non-human vertebrates. And when the words but is not limited to were in there, that potentially could have broadened the practice of chiropractic in animals. So we wanted to limit it to that what is described there.
Okay.
And part of the compromise you'll find on both the House and Senate side, but if you stay on the House side on lines 20.3, you'll see that at the end of that sentence, it has been referred to the chiropractor by a veterinarian. So the veterinarian is involved in this process. So that was part of the important part of the compromise. And then the House added some language that is on page R20 at the bottom of R20. It says a licensed chiropractor who treats both animals and human patients in the same facility must post a conspicuous sign in the reception area of the facility informing customers that the non-human patients are treated on these premises. Plus, well, both sides added the separate treatment room, both House and Senate on line 22.22 on the House side, you'll see that a separate treatment room is required if you're going to treat animals, which was not part of the original bill, but it was added as we went through the process.
Senator Ropes.
Mr. Chair, another follow-up, Senator Dill. Thank you. I remember having all these conversations. The piece that I don't remember being added in any of our committees or on the floor was the referral that you need the animal needs to be referred to a chiropractor by a vet. It seems that we passed over that amendment in several committees and on the floor. So I'm curious how it got into the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ropes, Erickson Ropes, that part was added in the Finance Committee. So it was added before we got to the floor. And then on the floor, there was there's an additional amendment that just clarified certain things. That's where we goofed up on the but are not limited to language. And
But anyway, it went on in conference committee. Or not in conference, but in finance committee.
Oh. And Mr. Chair, Senator Ropes, Representative Conan can concur. That was part of the agreement on the House floor. It was amended with the Senate referral language, which is not, it's not real strict referral language. And I think that's where the compromise came, that the veterinarian still needs to refer. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have to have an office visit. They could do it by phone. They could do it by letter. They could do it in different ways, particularly for their long-term customers that they're working with and others. So I think Representative Conan can confirm, but that was kind of the seen as the middle ground, that it's not a real, you have to come into the office, pay $75, get your referral, but there's other ways to do it, and it kept the vets and the chiropractors, they came to an agreement, and both dropped the opposition to the both sides of the bill that they were fighting. Representative Conan, can maybe.
Conan. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, and that's right. It's felt like there was enough room within the language in the agreement that veterinarians and chiropractors could develop relationships, and the bottlenecks we were worried about and that would force everything through a veterinarian's office would be very minimal, and also the additional cost too could be very minimal with the development of relationships there.
And Mr. Chair, just to follow up one more. Thank you, Representative Cohen. So is that referral process defined anywhere?
I don't believe it is, but maybe staff can answer that question. But I don't believe there's a real strict definition of that. That was my understanding with the agreement. But
the gentleman's agreement? Or?
Well, see, and that's what happens in the process. You know, people, read. The animal has been referred to the chiropractor by a veterinarian. If we don't define what that referral is, the public's going to be very confused.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Ropes, I'd say just the opposite. You want to leave it undefined. Once you start defining it, you really start tightening up what that referral means, and you maybe exclude the phone call or the letter or the memo on the email or there's a plethora of ways that a veterinarian can refer and keep a record of it. And again, if we start defining that, you've got another section of statute, and we may miss something. And so I tend to think the other way, that it's better open-ended here. You know, if we run into a problem in the future, certainly we can revisit it. But with the agreement they had, they kind of wanted it to leave it that way, so there's a multitude of ways to refer.
Okay. Senator Scogin.
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, thank you. I think I have the same concerns that Senator Erickson Ropes has, that we've discussed this issue numerous times in the Senate, and referral never made it. We beat it every time. And now I see it's here, and it's undefined. I guess I can trust this committee that somebody's come together and made an agreement, but I'm not convinced that that's what the agreement was.
Well, Senator Scogin, you don't know how much time and how much headache that I had even trying to get this thing to where it is today. Took a lot of time, a lot of give and take on both the veterinarians and the chiropractors. So, I'm not a veterinarian, I am not a chiropractor, I'm a farmer. So that's kind of out of my line. But Senator Dill, I put you in the Senate side. You were supposed to be in charge of that and see how things work. So I'm going to have to rely on you or else Representative Conan, because...
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the representatives of the chiropractic profession and the veterinary profession came together and reached this agreement, and that's the way things often work around here. We debate, we talk, we try different things, and things are getting slowed up one way or the other, and so to try to make everything work right and keep everybody happy and this agreement was reached, I think we ought to try it out and see how it works. And I met, as I mentioned many times, the 13 states that do this, every state requires a veterinary referral
except Oklahoma, and Oklahoma also requires it in some cases. So we're not doing anything that's out of the ordinary here.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and members, you know, I don't much like the referral language either, and have consistently voted with the rest of my colleagues against the referral issue. But, you know, and I don't know much about veterinary medicine other than I sit next to one on most committees. And Senator Dill, the one thing that I found out in the 16 years that I've served with him, when he puts his mark on a piece of legislation, it's just like taking it to the bank. So if Senator Dill's comfortable with this, I am too. The one thing that I can say, though, is that I like the way the House has put the referral together to kind of leave it up to this relationship that hopefully is fostered. And, you know, like I said, I think most anybody in the state can tell you that if Senator Dill puts his name on something, it's good as gold. So,
any further discussion? Senator Dill, do you want to move?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to renew my motion to take the House language.
Okay, Senator Dill renews his motion.
Except we'll also pick up the Senate language on the two lines on page 25, R25, page lines 23.18 and 23.19.
Any further discussion on the Dill motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted. R72.
Right?
Right. Fertilizer research grant to House.
Mr. Chair, this was a House provision. I carried it. It was really a department bill. It really should have been in the revisor's bill last year. It just simply, again, allows the money to be used in the second year of the biennium instead of the first for the fertilizer research grants. That committee is meeting and ready to go with their RFPs or have. And this just allows them to spend the money in a different year. It's real technical.
Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adapted. Next one, House Motor Coach.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to move that. Again, this came to us from the Agriculture Society, which runs the fairgrounds. They have an event this summer coming with these larger family motor coaches. They're extra long units, and they would take up more than one camping spot. And so what this language does is allow them to charge only one fee per unit rather than two camping spot fees. They brought it to us and asked for it, and again, it's benign. Everyone's agreed on it. It just simply allows them to differentiate that charge for this single event.
Representative Junkie, that's just one time, 1 year.
One time, 1 year, one event.
Yeah, I know have a relation at camp with when the state fair's on, and they're very, very touchy. Boy, you got to have that
thing.
Well,
this came from the state fair, so this is their deal.
Okay.
I'd move that.
On Junkie motion,
it's
Motor Coach Association reduced rates. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now we'll go to the next one.
I don't know. Are we ready on the VHS? I don't know that we're not. Oh,
I can move that for you, Mr. Chair.
Hemp. Okay.
House industrial hemp.
Representative Bingham wanted to. You want to move? No, I'll move the hemp. Keep
Thank
you out
you.
Of trouble.
Representative Junkie, what does that?
Excuse me a minute. We have a panicked person at the table.
Oh, okay. When Jenny.
I just wanted to point out a small error. Quinn Cheney with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. In the House Ag Finance Committee, we changed the administering of this provision from the Commissioner of Agriculture to AURI, but we neglected to change it on line 36.3. It says that the Commissioner shall present a proposal, and I believe the intention was that the that AURI present a proposal. Is that not correct?
This actually do well.
Which line are we on?
36.3.
Give me a while to get to the page. 36.3.
It's a marijuana bill.
So you want the commissioner to say AURI?
Yeah, delete the commissioner and say the AURI.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd move Section 35 and incorporate AURI on Section 36.3 in place of the commissioner.
And, Mr. Chairman, I think you want to do the same on 35.33.
Is that right? Okay, same thing there, AURI. On 35.33, replace the commissioner with AURI, and that's the same on 36.3. Then I think it's no, you don't want to do it on that line.
Maybe I'm just a little bit unclear, Mr. Chair. On my understanding is that the commissioner of agriculture, you want the commissioner of agriculture to propose a system for licensure and regulation, but you want AURI to develop a proposal for establishing industrial hemp as a cash crop option. So I guess
that's under the licensing part, so you want to keep that under the commissioner, correct?
Correct. So I guess the question would be,
okay, so 35.33 stays the same because that's under the licensing piece. 36.3 is actually part of the report from the earlier part, so that changes. Okay. So just change 36.3. Everything else stays the same. And members, again, this proposal now came to us. This was a con bill originally. I don't know who in the Senate.
Roger Moe.
Roger Moe. Maybe that's why he called me this afternoon. I didn't answer the call.
Well, Representative Junkie, I want to tell you, when I first come here, I was a co-author of that bill, and I thought we'd never get it done. Maybe we're finally getting.
Well, let me explain. Senator Vickerman, you're right. This was so benign it didn't even receive debate on the House floor. Because basically what this does is none of this takes place until the DEA, Federal Drug Enforcement Administration or agency, deems that this is a legal crop in the United States. At that day, whether it's tomorrow or next year or 10 years from now, then we're prepared to go with the Minnesota usage of it. So nothing happens until DEA says it's a go. And that's, again, and if you can imagine the debate, and you know the debates we've had in the past, we've had asking our department to get a federal waiver on this. We've done a number of things. We've actually, the ag committees have passed this in the House, both Republican and Democrat ag chairs over the years, and I think you have too, but we've never gotten to the finish line. Again, this one is through all the committees and on the floor was deemed okay by everyone. In an unanimous way.
I just look at this as one more tool in the toolbox. That's what they use around this place.
And as Mr. Chair, as you know, North Dakota is applying for a waiver now, and they're actually going through the court system. We don't know what their success will be, but it's also grown legally right across the border in Canada, and the products are actually sold into Minnesota. And we did learn on the House floor, actually Representative Gunther got up and explained that the Chinese are using this to make clothes. It's a wonderful material, as Representative Treadwell will say, and it can be used for food, it can be used for fiber, it can be used for oil. It's a real interesting crop, and you need to smoke about 10 acres of it to get high. So it's actually for drug enforcement purposes, and we had testimony from U of M actually has a researcher that works on this. It's actually a deterrent. For people that plant this kind of ditch weed in a field, it cross-pollinates with the high-value THC if they have it growing outside in a hidden plot somewhere, and actually diminishes the value of the high THC crop. Mm. So it actually spoils that crop when it's grown out there. So it was very interesting testimony this year, and I think Representative Kahn finally got it in a position where, again, nothing happens until the feds approve it, period.
There's Kogan.
And AURI then has money for that study to get back to us by 2009.
Mr. Chair, we're on the board of ARI. The answer is yes.
Yeah, I can remember when we started this long, long time ago, and they brought in different cloth. They made clothing.
Yeah.
then it kind of just disappeared over the years, so now we're back again. So if we allow this, they won't be in the paper that we're starving people by eat it. They can eat it.
Yeah. You can eat your clothes
after the ball.
Yeah, it's better than smoking your clothes.
Okay.
And so I'd renew my motion as amended on the one spot to change the commissioner to URI.
On the junkie motion, any discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Then I think Representative Bingham would like to move the Section 36 of VHS.
Yes, I would move the House version of Section 36.
Yep. She can explain that bill if senators would like to know about it a little bit.
Maybe you could just briefly tell us what it is. Could you?
Mr. Chair, I saw the pictures in committee, and it's not pretty.
Yeah.
It has to do with an invasive species that attacks the fish, and it basically, from what the pictures look like, turn the insides out, and it's just a virus that kills an invasive species. And from my understanding, Representative Hansen wants the commissioners to come up with a plan and figure out how we can deal with this on an issue that it's before it gets worse.
Representative Bingham, that's Bingham. That's those pictures, those fish that turn pink.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now I know what you're talking about because
yep.
I saw the pictures of the fish. And it hasn't got here yet, and we don't want it here either. But
right, we want to stop it from coming here and making our fish in our area worse.
Yeah, I know what it is now. Okay.
Until we do, then I'll just wait out.
Representative Bingham renews your motion. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
I think we're about done for the day.
Guys, we're
Mr. Chair, members, as we finish up.
Oh,
it's got some housekeeping things in ag.
Okay, sure.
The committee adopted the ethanol blending policy article from the House, but we actually missed a couple sections on R37. The section that Mr. Knopf described correctly is just sort of syncing up definitions of ethanol blending gasoline in statute, sections 6 and 7 on the House side of R37.
I'd move that, Mr. Chair. Just picking up a couple more sections on the ethanol blending policy that we missed.
Does everybody understand that motion?
Mm-hmm.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Anything else on the ag side? I think that's it for right now, Senator Bickerman. Till Friday. You're going to get home in time for your bottle of wine.
Good work. It isn't 4:30 yet.
No. We can do it in 2 hours on Friday. We're set.
Anything else to come before the committee?
Okay.
Well, we call the chair probably Friday.
Yeah. We will adjourn till the call of the chair, and in the meantime, I hope we get some targets so we can kind of really wrap things up. And Representative Junkie, you will be doing it the next, and we'll be in the House in 300 South. We haven't got a time yet.
Watch the postings for room and time.
Okay, members, as there's more and more to come before the committee, and we're adjourned.